Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 20 of the Overthrows podcast. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at DefMango on Twitter. And with me, as always, is Jared Kimber, who you can find literally everywhere. And in the comments, we've already have had a few super chats. You guys have to wait for those. We'll be answering them at the end of the show. And Abhiram Velamuri, ABCDEF, Funk Laster, and Sankalp Verma. Who else do we have over here? Lenny Rodriguez, Sheraton KD, Indie Guy, Anmol Shrivats. All of you, thank you so much for already being here. Arco is here as well. And just hold tight. We'll get to your questions. But before that, Jared, three major teams are on the verge of first round exits in the ongoing T20 World Cup, which makes us wonder why we haven't had a 20 team T20 World Cup in years gone by.
Funny, isn't it? The amount of times over the last 17 years I've been reporting on cricket that like mainstream cricket fans will just say things like, the other teams are no good, they ruin everything, blah, blah, blah. Even when there were facts against them, it's the same with women's cricket. Women will never be good at cricket, blah, 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 blah. Women don't like cricket. And so, well, it turns out that these other countries and these women, they actually, as two individual groups, really like the cricket. And I think it's also, it's huge for Bob Woolmer and Richard Doane, you know, the sort of the people and some of the other people at the ICC have helped facilitate this. You know, the ICC gets a lot of bad raps for associate cricket, but they actually did a great job in growing a lot of these countries, which is why we're in this situation now. Then they made a lot of terrible jobs at their executive level when they decided not to let any of these countries come in. And, you know, what we're seeing, I didn't know much about Canadian cricket, that they would probably... Them in Uganda would probably be, I'd seen a little bit more of Uganda maybe, but they'd be the teams that I didn't know as much of recent times. They've been fine. Oman, I've not, you know, I've done anything special, but Oman's a decent side and I like the way they play cricket as well. Like the, you know, Papua New Guinea haven't, almost stole one game and then almost stole two games really, I suppose, depending on how you look at it.
Yeah.
You know, they've made the tournament better and there's still going to be a lot of one-sided games and games that we could skip. And if you're thinking to yourself at the moment, I don't want to watch Nepal versus Sri Lanka, when that comes up, I think that's a more than fair decision to make. Or Uganda West Indies was a game where I was just like, I think I know how this one's going to go. I will set my alarm and watch a little bit of it, but I'm pretty sure I know where that's going to go. But that's also the case sometimes between the major teams as well, right? Like, you know, it's been a really, really crazy tournament and I've enjoyed it, you know, outside of a few things that are just stupid so far. I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, likewise. It has been crazy indeed. And, you know, with the associates, I feel like when they face off against each other, it makes for some really compelling cricket. But then obviously we've had some major results and upsets in this tournament and it's only been, a week or 10 days old, something like that. Anyway, the way I've structured today's overthrows is that we're going to go group by group and we're going to touch the major themes and the major teams in each of those groups.
We'll start in alphabetical.
Okay. Yeah. Chronological alphabetical order. And what better place to start than Pakistan, failing to defend 160 versus the USA, after which they were unable to chase 120 versus India. Finalists in the last edition, in eight tournaments, they've made the semi-final six times. They've won it once. They've made the finals thrice and now they need Kudrat to Nizam like it's never Nizamed before. They require Ireland and India to beat the USA and then they also have to defeat Canada and Ireland handsomely. And if you've seen the weather forecast in Florida, it seems like it's pretty much all but over for the men in green. But then Jared, Kudrat did Nizam for Pakistan. They won an important toss versus India, right? They had the best of the conditions with both bat and ball. The sun came out in the second innings. They have just themselves to blame for being in this situation.
Yeah, it was funny. I think it was on the final word. Jeff Lemon was saying they gave that game away. And I was like, when did they have that game? What was what? And there were a lot of fans who were saying that. Like a lot of fans were like, India's done. I was like, and I think India got to 8-1 or something at one stage. And I'm watching it going, I must be watching a completely different game here. Because what I'm seeing is a team behind the run rate who is struggling all the way through. And if you want to know where Pakistan lose that game, it's the fifth and sixth overs of the first innings when they're bowling to India, when they allow whatever it was, 25, 30 runs off a couple of overs there. That's actually when they lost this game, when they couldn't take a catch, when they couldn't stop the ball, when they were bowling terribly. And then the Harris Ralph over as well later on when he came on the, was it the eighth over, ninth over, whenever it was?
It was the 10th over.
Oh, it was the 10th, was it? Yeah.
Yeah. That's the reason why India got to 80 in 10, and they were at 50 for two after the power play. Pakistan were 35 for one after their power play. And when you know the ball is hard at the start, you make use of those conditions.
But what were
it only got harder.
But what were Bangladesh at the start of their power play today against?
Not many.
And they batted, I thought they batted really, really well. And they were about 35 as well, I reckon. Right? Like maybe 30. I mean, you know, a handful of runs either way. The point is, it isn't easy. And I think you're wrong. You said that the conditions were better for Pakistan all the way through. I actually think it gets harder to bat on this wicket as the game gets on. The only games I would say that maybe wasn't the case was the Bangladesh one was a bit iffy, Bangladesh, South Africa, but there was one other one that I've now forgotten where I thought the wicket pretty much stayed the same. But usually it doesn't matter because kind of a few of these teams are chasing nothing. Look, the USA one is the big issue here, right? When you have a pitch like the New York pitch and you're going up against a team like India, it's at best, you've got, you know, a 40% chance of winning anyway. They might have got themselves to a 60% and 65% chance at times. They never got above the rate. They always had to deal with Jasprit Bumrah. And eventually, I do think the wicket got a lot worse in the back half of that game, in the back half of that innings, which actually also happened to India. So I'm not going to sit here and lie to you because I put money on India. I was positive India were going to win that game, right? At the halfway mark, absolutely positive that India was going to win that game. So I'd be disingenuous to say that Pakistan threw it away because I never thought Pakistan were in front, right?
Prior to the game, I was previewing the game for Pro Sports and I said that Pakistan can only win this game one way. If they bowl first and bowl India out for 110. And I hate to be this right. Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what it was.
Those extra nine runs. Overall, that Harris Ralph over really cost you your prediction, didn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
But really, Pakistan are in the position they're in because of the USA game, right? Where they played way worse against USA than they did against India. They had some really good performances against India. Against USA, you know, they lost a bunch of early wickets. Then they rebuilt, but Babar Azam had the handbrake on because he was a little bit worried about a collapse. Mm-hmm. Then they had a second collapse, even though he was out there with a handbrake on. He could never take it off, really, even though he got a couple of sixes away. They never scored enough runs. Their bowlers looked either too eager to take wickets or too timid. There was no like in between of this is where we need to bowl on this wicket. And then they had a fantastic run where they almost stole that game. And then that horrendous moment in the Super Over. I'd be much more concerned about that.
Oh, my God.
But this whole idea, I've seen things like, oh, the players owe it to Pakistan, like from former players and things. I'm just like, what are we talking about here? They got rolled by an associate who's feeling it at the moment. And then they almost beat a better team than them. I mean, that's the truth. They almost beat a better team than them. But, you know, They don't put enough pressure. If you want to know the real difference, I think, between the two sides, and three sides, if you want to put USA in. USA put pressure back on you when they're batting because they look for sixes. India, through Rohit and Virat, who both went out, but then Rishabh and Akshar kept putting pressure back on Pakistan. Pakistan would every now and again run at a ball and try and hit it over deep cover for six and then just go straight back into their holes every time.
Yeah.
Right? And that's both games. Both games they did that, on the good wicket and on the bad wicket. And it's like you need to be able to continually put pressure on these other sides at the moment. And I think that's where they went wrong. But look, these things happen. It's a World Cup. Mm-hmm. And as you said before, the associates are getting better. And that, you know, Ireland could still beat Pakistan as well. Like, you know, and Canada has played some good cricket in
Canada
this tournament.
Could beat Pakistan in New York, right? I feel like if I look at both their games, the batters did really let the team down, I feel, especially versus the USA. If you take Shaheen's blitz at the end out of the equation, they don't get to 159. Then they definitely lose that game, right? I think they underutilized their power play in both of those games. First game, 3 for 30. Second game also, I felt like the best of the conditions were in the first six overs. They kind of botched that. They haven't shown enough intent running between the wickets. I feel like that's an area where other teams have done extremely well. And Pakistan and perhaps Sri Lanka have really, you know, bottled it over there. And, you know, maybe it wasn't as big of a bottle job as people are making it to be. But it was still a bottle job versus India. You know, you still get 120 runs because now you have to, you know, play accordingly in the second innings, even if the wicket is hard. Imad Wasim wasted his matchup versus Akshar in that over. I thought that was a big moment. Rizwan's wicket was a big moment.
So let's go back to this. This is where I think we're not factoring in the pitch. Akshar bowled four balls short outside off stump. Right? Yeah.
He tried the same cut shot every single time.
Now, if he tried to drag that to the leg side on that pitch, I reckon he probably spoons it up in the air. We've seen multiple people on that wicket try and force it back down the ground and be caught and bowled or caught at short cover, right? He played the right shot to the ball and missed it, right? Part of the reasons he missed it is because that is not an easy pitch to time the ball on, right? Now, if you really want to have a go at Pakistan, I don't think it's saying Imad Wasim made a mistake there. I think it's sending Imad Wasim out with Rizwan. When you could have sent out someone who could hit some boundaries straight away and put some more pressure on. So again, I just say we look at these things. No one, I promise you this, today in the Bangladesh-South Africa game, I told everyone, right, back Bangladesh when they're bowling. And the minute and South Africa bowl, if they make over 95 runs or 85 runs, back South Africa when they're bowling, right? Yeah. And have a look at that game. It's exactly what I did for the India game. It's exactly what I've been doing for multiple games. And, you know, it's the same when Canada got, what'd they get, 135 or whatever it was against Ireland. I was all in on Canada, man, for the same reason. Yeah. I'm not betting on the teams, right? Mm. I am betting on the wicket. It is hard, and it gets harder to bat on the longer you're out there. And you saw with Bangladesh, once they lost a wicket, the new batters came out. When Ifti came out, and when Imad came out, it got harder and harder for new batters the later it is into the innings. So that new ball...
But then again, you have to consider that Rizwan was out there for a while. And if Bumrah is coming in for a fresh new spell, you don't do that on the first ball. That is a brain fail.
No one's disagreeing with that. That is
stupid. That was also, Jared, we keep talking about the pitch. But Pakistan missed full tosses, right? Yeah. The pitch was out of the equation.
What about Rohit's shot?
True.
Do you know what I mean? We have to be honest here. This is a tough wicket. And really, I would say Rizwan and Rohit are two very good tough wicket players, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of people, I've seen a lot of tweets going, oh, look at what Rishabh Pant can do in this wicket. No one else can do it. He's got a control percentage of about 55 in the two innings he's played here. Yeah. He just, for some reason, no one can catch him when he hits the ball up in the air, right? And so this is cricket unlike what we know it before. That's why the India game, I'm willing to say, look, it came down to the end. Pakistan's mistakes were more important than India's mistakes, right? And sometimes that is the difference. The issue here is not that game. The issue here is that they lost to the USA from probably in three different ways throughout that game, right?
I mean, they bowled a million wides, including that super over, right?
And how many runs in the super over?
18 how many or 17.
How many boundaries?
There was one boundary. The rest were wides and they ran off each wide.
The bowler couldn't execute his ball. The wicketkeeper couldn't pick it up. And they just kept doing the same plan over and over again. Right? Like,
yeah.
And even with the choice of the batters, it's like, well, what? Why?
Why was Fakhar not facing in the super over, right? You've got a left-handed bowler. You take the angle out. You send in Fakhar Zaman, the one guy who you can trust to hit a six off the first delivery. So that was strange. I mean, Shaheen has looked like a shadow of his former self, if we're being real. And I do feel for Naseem Shah. My heart does ache for that kid because otherwise I'm quite impartial. But he took 3 for 21 versus India and batted better than most of Pakistan's batters. Got an unbeaten 10 off 4. So spare a thought for him. And I mean, Amir and Harris were okay. They were all right in that game as well. But Pakistan have been bang average in all three departments.
Exactly. Their why are we still talking so about bad. Pakistan? They're finished. Yeah. I mean, I suppose net run rate means they can still get through. Is that right?
I mean, they can, but the weather prediction.
Yeah, as you said before. Yeah, net run rate is their problem, isn't it? It's not their problem. So they've still got a chance there. India's going to get through. Ireland are gone. Realistically, and so
the USA have a solid chance, and a washout for the USA helps them go through. And I mean, ultimately, poor fielding will always cost you big games. But anyway, moving on to India, right? They created history by defending their lowest ever total in T20Is versus Pakistan, 120 to be exact, and then they rolled over Ireland for 96. Rohit got a 50 in that game and was actually executing his pull and hook shot on that surface where no one can do that, right? You do not pull for the life of you on that surface. And Rishabh Pant has probably been the best batter in New York. I think we can all say that quite comfortably. And Jasprit Bumrah across two games has taken 5 wickets for no runs and showed us all exactly why he is probably unarguably the best all-format cricketer in contemporary cricket. It's been a solid start for the men in blue. But what do you think they need to improve on over here?
Cricket 8 brings you this show. They are a new player in the game trying to educate fans on what is really happening in cricket. Head over for their watch-alongs, podcasts and articles on what is happening on the field and why it matters. Cricket 8 is your place for cricket intelligence.
Look, they are, of all the teams, have probably shown the most intent on this wicket. And
yes,
that Ireland game could have got tricky. Like, no one's ever going to look back on that and say, oh, you know, India were ever in any danger. But having a look at every other single game at this ground, I think we can now say India had some danger there. And they knocked that danger away by showing intent. Mm-hmm. They won the Pakistan game by showing intent. They've gone away. You know, their seam bowling is a little bit iffy. You know, we know Siraj can run hot and cold. Ashdeep doesn't look in great form. Hardik probably wasn't in great form for a good periods of time, although he's ended up with fairly decent figures, but that's partly because that wicket is helpful. But Ashdeep will go out and Kuldeep will come in. So
yes, sir.
If I'm working for India at the moment, and if, you know, Rohit rang me up at the moment and said, what do you think? I'd be like, just keep doing what you're doing. You managed to handle these conditions and you defended that total really well and you played really well against Ireland. Just keep doing what you're doing. I think they can get better as a side once they move to the Caribbean, just because I think the third seamer is their weakest part of their game. Ashdeep's bowled some absolute horrendous trash on a wicket that he's not the only one. Him and Rabada is another one where it's like, every other seamer looks incredible. And then Ashdeep and Rabada are like, what do we do on this wicket that everyone is loving? So, we've seen he struggled a little bit, but he just comes out, right? And then you bowl more spin as well. Like, they can bowl the two finger spinners more.
Ashdeep goes out, who, by the way, has conceded 30 plus in both New York games, which is crazy. And then if Kuldeep comes in, of course, you're looking at a better side. Rishabh Pant has looked like their best batter. And Jasprit Bumrah is a cheat code, right? And he literally was the difference between India and Pakistan on the day. I would go on to say that. And India are definite contenders. But I feel like we need to see them outside of New York as well to know more.
Yeah, I just think they'll be better outside of New York. So I'm not particularly worried about that.
By far, they have been the best team in New York. And them scoring 50 in the power play versus Pakistan killed that game. That's what I feel. Anyway, let's come to the USA, who are unbeaten in their home World Cup, which is friggin' amazing. And as things stand, you know, they look solid to qualify for the Super 8s, which is also a wild statement. Monank Patel scored 50 versus Pakistan. And Saurabh Netravalkar, 2-for-18 in 4 overs versus Pakistan. The left-arm pacer has probably one of the best arcs in modern-day cricket. This guy played an Under-19 World Cup for India. Then he goes to Cornell, of all universities in the States, to study. He's a software engineer at Oracle, has currently taken leave to play this World Cup. He sings and plays the ukulele as well, is damn good at it, and has now won a World Cup game versus Pakistan. He is living every brown dad's ultimate dream, Saurabh Netravalkar, and he is completely winning at life. What a guy.
And his mum's still like, why didn't you become a doctor? I've watched him a fair bit. He's not like an elite bowling talent in the way that, say, Ali Khan is. And he doesn't have that high upside like someone like Aaron Jones. But he's that kind of, what would you put him in? That sort of Craig Young, Barry McCarthy level of cricketer, where you just like, when he's used the right way and the conditions are in his favor, you have to go through him. Do you know what I mean? Like, there are better players at associate level. And he's not particularly fast. And he's not always deadly accurate. But he's got some really good skills. And I actually, this is going to sound weird, I actually like the way he bowled earlier in the game rather than towards the end. I thought he just bowled beautifully. He really had Pakistan under such pressure just by the way he was bowling. And, you know, they've been very strong in the power play for a while now, USA, and he's a big, big part of that. And so, no, it was absolutely great. I mean, you know, what a start. I know it started some sort of flame wars between baseball fans and cricket fans. And I'm sure that's annoying for people involved, but I'm not involved, so I don't care. But
hey, when people see Stephen Taylor's catch in the slips, cricket wins, baseball loses.
Well, but 100%. The point is that cricket has entered those conversations again, right? And so there is now... You know, America. You know, New York Times get abused for their bad subheading on their article about I think it was
119 to 130.
Yeah,
I think it was brilliant. You get the point across to American masses.
It doesn't matter anyway, right? Like, but the point is, we want more of those mistakes because we want different markets to start to take it to cricket, right? That's the whole point of this. USA and Canada have done brilliant things for cricket in their countries at the moment. And we've seen Namibia do that in previous World Cups and Uganda having their first, you know, World Cup win and Netherlands are playing good cricket again. And that's what we need. That's the sport. And USA at home, it's the market that can change everything for cricket into the future.
Absolutely.
And, you know, so many people have obviously been involved. You and I have done a podcast on sort of the history of USA cricket. I just think it's great. And I love the way they play as well. They try and hit sixes. They've got a couple of, you know, decent seam options. And they've got a couple of kind of more all-roundery guys that they try and, you know, cheat with. They've got Hamid bowling his sort of underarm sliders. I was trying to work this out the other day who he is. It's probably Jayasuriya, isn't it? That's kind of who he is maybe the most like, that sort of just on a slant into you the whole time.
You're right.
But yeah, no, I've been enjoying watching, you know, bits of USA cricket for a long time now, and they're playing with a freedom that I didn't really expect from them in this World Cup. And it's been captivating. Yeah. And if this is it, if they only get the two wins and India smash them in the face and Ireland finally work out how to play cricket again, then we've still had a great time from them.
Absolutely. I mean, Aaron Jones has been one of the best batters on display. I would take Aaron Jones over any Pakistani middle order batter currently.
Would you take Aaron Jones over Nicholas Curtin, though?
Ooh, that's a tough one because I really like Curtin's bat swing, right? And I love left-handed batters. But also, I think USA are really smart. Like, they brought in Ken Jige, the slow left-armer versus Pakistan, and played two slow left-armers versus them. He got 3 for 30. And Netravalkar, as you said, with the new ball, 3 overs, 1 for 8. And I saw this guy for the first time when USA beat Bangladesh not too long ago in a T20I series. I was impressed straight away. They've got some good cricketers. And now slowly, maybe they get some more infrastructure and structure for cricket around in the USA because, well, they've won. So maybe that helps. But I mean, they have every likelihood of going through to the Super 8s. But even if that doesn't happen, it's been a wonderful ride.
They're playing with someone else's money at this point. They've been fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely.
If they made it to the second round, let's be honest, they will probably get dragged by a bunch of teams. I mean, I hope not, but they will probably just get dragged by a bunch of teams. If they don't make it to the second round and there's heartbreak, well, there's another story, right? And, all credit goes to the players and the staff because I don't think Stuart Law's been coached for that long because...
Probably not.
I was going to do some work. I was asked to have a meeting with USA Cricket about the future of their game and everything when it comes to analysis and all those sorts of things. And I don't know even though, and it wasn't that long ago I had that meeting, Bayram, and I don't think Stuart Law was coach at the time, because if he was coach at the time, he probably would have been in on that meeting. But that just tells you how weird and wild it has been.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, of course, I am half Canadian as well. So happy that Canada finally became the 22nd team to win a World Cup game in the history of T20 World Cups. They held their nerve to defeat Ireland. And I love that.
Was that because Canada's first win?
They nearly defeated the USA as well.
Yes, was that Canada's first win over a test playing nation since 2003?
It has to be because they defeated Bangladesh in 2003 in the ODI World Cup, remember?
Was that Bangladesh? I know they beat someone. I can't even remember.
Wasn't it?
It was John.
I'm pretty sure it was Bangladesh.
They had an incredible little run there. Yeah, because they haven't been around for a while. Look, I actually thought, I mean, they probably stuffed up the USA game by having no fifth bowler. And they brought the fifth bowler in against Ireland. And instantly they looked like a better side, even though it was a spinner. But of all the bowling attacks in this tournament, and this is going to sound so fucking random when I say this out loud, but of all the bowling attacks in this tournament, only South Africa probably have an attack that is more suited to the New York pitch. because they've got a couple of big, tall guys who just bang it into the wicket. And you can, you know, even Marco Jansen, who's tall, doesn't always get it right on this wicket. You know, and Rabada hasn't been banging it in. And you look at India, they have Jasprit Bumrah, but Siraj and Ashdeep don't really bang it into the wicket. And you go through all the different teams. So that's, again, why I was all in on Canada. I was just like, they've got guys who are just going to hit the middle of that wicket. And I really like the way they went about it, picking that extra bowler, backing their batters, all those sorts of things has worked for them. You know, they've got, I've now completely forgot, but they've got two games to go as well, don't they?
Yeah, they've got Pakistan and New York, which they, I mean, can you rule them out at this point? Of course not.
And then they've
I'm just happy that one of my nations has won a game. Go Canada.
Oh my God. And then they've got India, right? So they've got the two hard games to come. Yeah. But again, they have shown us, and they're a fair way down our expectations. If you'd have told me that that Canada won a game, I'd be like, must have been a thriller against USA where everything went right.
Yeah.
And at this stage, they're setting themselves up for one win and perhaps even two if Pakistan just like mail it in.
Yeah, and I mean, Ireland is still a considerable victory for them because it is a test-playing nation, which everyone seems to forget, by the way. Everyone calls them an associate nation, and it gets on my nerves at times. But anyway, let's move on to group number B.
Group number B.
Scotland. Scotland have put England, to the sword early in the T20 World Cup. Munsey and Jones scored 90 versus Joss Butler's team in 10 overs before, that game was washed out. And since then, they have comfortably defeated Namibia. And then they chased down 151 versus Oman in 13.1 overs, which has given them a massive lead on net run rate. And that has made England sweat and is currently making England sweat. I think Brad Wheel and Brad Curry have both been really good with the ball, as has Mark Watt. And then also with the bat, there are just so many batters who've done well. You know, Jones and Munsey up top, they've gotten runs. Munsey in particular looks very, very devastating. Brandon McMullen scored, 61, unbeaten of 31 in this game versus Oman. And then Leask and Berrington have showed us that they can hit a long ball. Mm. They won that Namibia game, right? These are your boys, Jared. And they are on the verge of Super 8 qualification. How does that feel?
You know, I was there towards the start of the journey. I would say they probably started the journey a little bit before me. Probably around 2016 is really where they started it. But this is kind of what we all thought they could do. This is the bowling attack that they always wanted to assemble. And, you know, through injuries, through players retiring, through players moving away from Scotland and England and all sorts of things, it never quite worked. But I remember this being the dream bowling lineup that was written down on paper. And, you know, as far as batting goes, you know, they've lost Callum McLeod and Kyle Kutzer, who are fantastic players, right? Like, but whether those players were specifically T20 players, because Scotland have been really pushing T20 players coming through, they've been able to replace them, you know, with Jones and I almost said McCullum.
McMullen. Brandon McMullen.
I almost said.
Brand ball.
I almost said it, Brandon McCullum there, just because I've been making that joke all day. But
yeah.
Look, so this is what they wanted to do. And I think it was when Kyle took over, he basically said, I want us to score a lot quicker. I want us to play, you know, a lot more, probably like England at that stage, I would have thought is where they got their inspiration from, but it might have been New Zealand as well. And he went out there and started smashing it, and they've just continued to follow that. And so they are a dangerous side. The Afghanistan game was really interesting. The Namibia game was really interesting because they got themselves in a terrible position, partly because of our man Brandon there just forgetting where the crease was at one stage. Because I thought they had that chase pretty comfortable. I thought they had good matchups against the bowlers. They had the small boundary on one side. You know, they had a few things in their favour. And then they just kept losing wickets. And then once Leask and Berrington came out, and, you know, I've seen Leask play cricket a lot. When he comes out and he tries to hit a six straight away, he quite often does it because of the sort of player he is. But when he does that, it's usually through nervous energy. And he didn't do that. And he came out and he batted really, really smart for a couple of balls. And I was like, oh, I think Namibia are in big trouble here. You know, I think I was on a group chat with some friends and I was like, it doesn't matter what the odds say to you at the moment. I think Scotland is about to absolutely train that. So that was a good win. But it also shows that they're not like this train of a side, right? We saw the best of them against England, partly because of the conditions. And they didn't have to bat tough all the way through there. But that still would have been a tough win for them.
They hit reverse sweeps off Adil Rashid, which I will never forget.
Yeah. I mean, Munsey can basically reverse sweep anyone. I don't even think, it's not even like a reverse sweep for him. He forgets which side of the bat he holds. But, you know, their record probably flatters them a little bit because the game against England was washed out. I'm not saying that they might not have won that because they might have, but it probably was going to get a little bit closer. And then on the other side of that, you have the two other associate teams that they've gone up against, right? We'll get a much better sense of how good Scotland are when they play Australia. I expect Australia to win that, but I do think that Scotland play the kind of game that is very different to other associate teams in that there is a bit like Afghanistan used to be with their bowlers, right? When they're an associate team, where you're just like, yeah, there's weaknesses here and they might fall, whatever, but they can also get on a roll. And if they get on a roll, they're not particularly easy to stop. And if you compare that to, you know, Namibia and, you know, Canada and, you know, some of these other teams, Papua New Guinea, they're just kind of, they chug along and they put pressure on you in little bits and hope that you eventually make a mistake. You know, Michael Jones is not that kind of player. Like, you bowl the wrong length to Michael Jones and he's going to put you onto the solar panels, right? Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So they are dangerous in a different way. Yeah. I wasn't making that up, Bayram. I saw that happen. Like, you were like, you won't believe this, dude. That actually happened.
It actually happened like two or three times across multiple games. It did, I think. Australia also hit the solar panels. I forget who was it. Maybe it was one of Head of Warner.
I hope they're sponsored, by the way, their solar panels, because I'm really worried about the amount of money that's costing Barbados cricket.
Yeah, absolutely. But you know what? Scotland have a net run rate of plus 2.7 or something like that, whereas England are minus 1.8.
It's ridiculous,
so all they need to do is lose not so badly
and their game
versus Australia.
Their game's after the other. So they're going to know what the thing is. And look, I think we saw the Australian fast bowlers got whacked the other night. You know, some of them fought back well. I think Cummins bowled well and Zampa bowled well. But it's not like, I don't think I've looked at Australia so far and thought they were awesome. There were times when England were on top of them. They sort of fell in a heap a little bit when the ball started to spin. You know, Mark Watt is going to be a challenge on you know, in certain conditions. It's a flat. The thing that helps Australia and doesn't help Scotland, I think, is that it's a flat going to be at Antigua, which is probably already looks like the best batting wicket in this old competition.
It really does.
I mean, we haven't got to St. Lucia yet, but St. Lucia might look even better. But right at the moment, that might be an issue just because Australia can score 220, 230, 240. If Travis Head goes absolutely nuts, Munsey, Jones, McMullen, Leask, all those guys, that's not even a level that they can dream of at the moment. So that would be my biggest concern. But on the other side, flat pitches against the Scottish batters and they'll be backing themselves as well.
This is brought to you by Cricket 8, the new home of cricket intelligence.
Yeah, and I mean, if there's a washout in one of the England games, and that's it, Scotland are through. Mm-hmm. And England are yet to beat a European team in the T20 World Cup in history, right? So there's that bit of nugget over there. And coming to England, of course, someone has also, Jenil Mehta has asked for the math for England. So basically, in the position that they're in, England need to beat Oman and Namibia convincingly.
Yeah.
Another good thing is that they also play in Antigua, right? So that'll help them. And they also need to hope that Australia steamrolls Scotland because they are at like a disparity of what, 4 point something when it comes to net run rate?
So Scotland is 2.1 and
it's 2.1.
And England is minus 1.8. So
almost 4.
Yeah, basically 4, right? So
that's crazy.
So if Scotland beat Australia, then England's done. If England somehow managed to lose either of those games, obviously England's done. But the most likely thing is that Australia beats Scotland and England beats Namibia and Oman. So then it's going to be, Scotland will know what they need to chase against Australia. Not what they need to chase, but what they need to do against Australia and give themselves a good chance there. But England's not playing brilliant cricket. They got themselves in a good position against Australia and completely gave it back and just fizzled out. And they had good batters at the crease who didn't look like getting there. Namibia and Oman have nagging, awkward bowlers that could cause them some issues. Mm-hmm. But I do think playing on that better surface is quite handy for them. So that should spur them on. We'll see how they go from there. But at the moment, you just have to think that Scotland is the more likely to go through because they have the points.
At the moment.
Yeah, because they have the points and they have the net run rate boost. But I think England just needs to play to 80% of their best against those other two sides, and they might still be able to get in ahead of Scotland. Like, that's, we see this a lot early in these World Cups, isn't it? Where we're like, oh, there's no way this team could come back from here. And it's like, well, actually, Scotland could get bowled out for 80 against Australia.
I feel that's the big one, right? I trust England to win handsomely versus Oman and Namibia, but I mean, potentially, like, in theory, they should. But Australia steamrolling Scotland. Is that going to happen? That might decide their fate. Also, Jared, they've conceded 291 runs in 30 overs that they've bowled in this World Cup. That is ridiculously high. And with the bat, they've only got one dig out there because they couldn't bat versus Scotland. But, you know, Salt and Butler were doing great until Zampa derailed their party. After that, they were quite awful and sure the conditions were difficult. But, you know, with rain in and around the area, a washout could knock them out. I feel like they are a bit unlucky that they are in this position because of a washout. I feel there's that.
I think if they got two washouts, even if they were going to lose to Scotland, like they didn't even get the chance to lose to Scotland. If they get another washout, then, you know, that's part of the problem. But they won't be the first team. You know, I think there was a Champions Trophy that Australia might have had a similar thing where they lost one game and then had a washout and that was kind of enough. Like we've, and I'm sure there's World Cups I'm not thinking of as well where similar things have happened before. Like it, if you lose games, you put your destiny in the hands of weather, right? And if you win games, you don't. And that's the situation that they've put themselves in this World Cup. And if they do have two games washed out, I think that's very, very, you know, it's very fair for everyone to say, well, wait, what's going on here? But at the same time, you know, they don't beat Australia and they got absolutely whacked by Australia. They've made it a lot harder for themselves already, right? Like, I mean, they could have lost that game to Scotland. I still think they probably get over, but I was like not massively in on England in that game.
Interesting. I did think that 109 and 10 overs with England's batting, I mean, surely they're going to give it a proper go. But then again, we'll never
know. There's two issues. And, Scotland didn't have very good death bowling, but that was a tricky wicket. And so it could have gone either way. We don't know. So they are where they are.
Yeah. Crazy how the finalists of the previous T20 World Cup are on the verge of first round exits. Anyway, Australia, they batted according to the modern T20 template versus England. And I feel like, you know, you look at Head and Warner, they both got out in the power play, but they also scored 74 runs. And that is ultimately what set them up for that 200 plus score. They are the only team to score a 200 plus score in this World Cup. Scotland would have gotten there versus Oman if they batted the full 20 overs, but that's still something. And then with the ball versus England, you know, Zampa happened, followed by Stoinis. So there was a shot at the Love Cafe, which barely ever goes wrong. Versus Oman, Marcus Stoinis stole the show, 67 with the bat, 3 for 19 with the ball. Barring Mitch Stark, perhaps, I feel like all the bowlers have done well. Even the seamers have hit their cutters really well, the Hazelwoods and Cummins. And I thought Nathan Ellis was fine as well, right? I do feel as a batting side, Australia looked like the best one in this T20 World Cup. And the template that they're playing, it is an antithesis to taking it deep. And that is what most teams fall prey to. Pakistan fell prey to that, right? I feel like taking it deep as a philosophy in T20 cricket is on the ventilator, if not entirely dead.
Well, Jared. I mean, it goes back to what we were saying about India before, right? Like, if you look at what Australia did to England, they won that game in the power play. That's the difference. Now, England made a lot of errors. And I would say two games in a row, England just stuffed up. So against Scotland, when they bowled spin to Munsey early on, I think you might have been in the group chat and I was just like, why are we doing this? This is not what you do to George Munsey. Why give an associate team a leg up for no reason? And then against Australia, it's like, pretty sure Travis Head has a really good strike rate against off spin as well. But they got through one over of off spin.
And then Will Jacks bowled the second.
And then Will Jacks bowled the second to the short boundary, right? Like, it's just, there was a couple of times in that game where I was just, I don't think they're quite thinking this through at the level that they need to. But let's go back to Australia. They are playing attacking cricket. They broke through a glass ceiling on that wicket that we didn't even know that you could make, even though they fizzled a little bit. I don't think they were massively impressive against Oman either. So, you know, they've had a couple of games where they've been good, but I don't think they've reached their peak yet. And the Mitchell Stark thing isn't going to go away, right? And, you know, who knows how far they'll have to drag that out, because he will eventually play a good game. And once he does, then it's hard to drop him because his good games are usually so loud. So
he'll save it for the knockouts.
Most probably, maybe he just needs a lot of games to get himself into rhythm in T20 cricket. I don't know. They've been impressive. I said beforehand, I thought they were of all the teams the most likely to win. I had England quite high. I don't anymore. Based on the way that they've been playing. Australia, I think, have been very impressive from what I've seen.
What I loved about that innings was that not a single batter got to 50 The highest score was Warner's 39 and they crossed 200. And that is the way I like to see teams play T20 cricket. Especially when, you know, in Barbados, very clearly you had to maximize the power play because the conditions got really, really difficult after the 10 over mark. Once the ball starts gripping, you know, the spinners come into play, the cutters come into play from the fast bowlers. I think Australia looked like, you know, the strongest team to me just as of now. Of course, this might change. And also, they became the second team to hit the solar panels versus England. So, England are the true culprits for all that money that Barbados has lost, right? Just to wrap up the group, and then we'll take a break. Namibia, they have been a team which have done well in the T20 World Cup in the past. David Wiese, they have him. And then Gerhard Erasmus, I felt, was kind of unlucky to be on the losing side versus Scotland. 2 for 29 with the ball, a 50 with the bat. Do you think they have one more win in them?
No, I think we've seen their best of this tournament. I suppose if something happens with England, of all the teams who could probably bother England, maybe they are, just because they will hang around. Look, Namibia is a really solid team with no weaknesses, but no massive strengths. And I've been saying that for a long time now, and we're seeing it again. But yeah, they've probably had the best of their World Cup and probably let themselves down a little bit against Scotland in the end. Losing the game against Scotland, that's fine. Losing it as easily as they did, I think, is a bit of a gut punch to them. They're probably not going to beat Australia, but who knows what emotional state or what England... I mean, if England need to score at like 20 runs and over against them, they're a disciplined side who do things correctly. I don't know. And, you know, I if it was on one of the other wickets, I would be more in favor of Namibia. But I cannot... Namibia just don't have a really top end when it comes to batting speeds. They just don't bat that fast. And so I can't see them winning another game. And, you know, the same, you know, same with Oman.
You know, who Oman cannot buy a victory right now. Like, no chance.
Well, they had a chance and they didn't get it. And it's got worse for them all the way through. So, look, I think if those two teams were playing England on a different surface, I'd be a little bit more interested. And maybe the fact that England has to go so hard actually loosens. When I was working for Scotland, we had to beat Netherlands at one stage in like, I can't remember, we were chasing like 180 or 190. And we had to, you know, score it in 12 or 13 overs or something ridiculous. It completely got in the players' heads and, you know, the game went to hell. Do get that sort of stuff does happen. That's Namibia or Oman's best chance from here.
Yeah, I really enjoy watching Namibia play cricket. So I'm hoping that they have one more surprise left for us. Anyway, that's two groups done. You guys are watching Overthrows with Behram and Jared. We'll be back after the short break with two more groups. So keep watching. This is your cue, Jared. Play the ad.
If you need your pitch change, well, NordVPN can doctor any surface to a new location so that your IP address is set for you to win. Want to watch a game on a free stream in another hemisphere? Give NordVPN the ball. Or if you just want to watch a clip on social media that a cricket board won't allow, promote NordVPN to pinch hit. So if you need a VPN, go Nord. Use nordvpn.com/Kimber to get a 2-year contract with a discount, plus 4 extra months and gifts in some markets. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. The link is in the show notes. Protect your computer like a bowler protects the boundaries in the death overs with nordvpn.com/Kimber today.
Welcome back to Overthrows. You guys are with Behram and Jared, and we are on to Group C in the T20 World Cup. Let's start with Afghanistan. They gave New Zealand a proper pounding in the Black Caps opening fixture in the T20 World Cup. Rehmanullah Gurbaz started with the bat, scoring a quick fire 80, which was actually, you know, his second consecutive 50. He got 76 versus Uganda as well. Has looked like $1 million in this T20 World Cup thus far. And then Rashid Khan and Fazal Haq Farooqi took figures of 4 for 17 each. Jared, Fazal Haq Farooqi actually has 9 wickets and 44 deliveries in this T20 World Cup. He took 5 for 9 versus Uganda as well. And he is, of course, the leading wicket taker. How insane is that? 9 wickets and 44 deliveries.
Yeah, it's... I'm trying to think of another run that someone's been on like that before. I can't... Maybe Malinga might have done...
Siraj in the ODI World Cup.
Who did you have?
Oh, sorry, Shami. Shami in the ODI World Cup?
Yeah, I suppose that was a good one, wasn't it? It's a very unlikely thing to have happened. But yes, no doubt he's on one. Their tournament has kind of, you know, been a dream so far. And they've got Papua New Guinea and the West Indies to come, right? Like, They did it. They had to beat New Zealand. I thought New Zealand had no chance in that game, being that they were going to Guyana to play a team that had already played in Guyana, and then they started complaining about not practicing at night. And I was just like, this team's not going to win this game. You know, the Papua New Guinea game, they were certainly well on top there. So they're flying at the moment. They probably need more batters to stand up rather than just one or two. Certainly their openers are carrying a big part of it at the moment. But
that is true.
I like what they've been doing so far. And I mean, I'm not sure that they haven't played the best cricket in that group.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at Gurbaz, he's had two really good games. But Zadran, Ibrahim Zadran also scored 70 versus Uganda. Sure, it was Uganda. But that's a solid opening pair.
Yeah. And so both those guys have made a lot of runs, haven't they?
Yeah. We're yet to see how the others fare because they didn't do it too well versus Uganda, right? Once the opening pair fell. But when you look at that spin attack, right? You've got your Rashid Khans. And Rashid bowled like peak Rashid Khan versus New Zealand, right? He was on a hat-trick at 1.4 for 17. And, I mean, you've got Noor Ahmed. Mohammad Nabi is still around. I think Mujeeb is not even playing. I feel like Fazal Haq Farooqi getting the ball, or new ball in particular, to talk the way he is, really gives them an edge. I would say they are definite dark horses. Afghanistan.
Yeah, I don't know if I would go that far because I kind of think against the best teams, they're going to lose early wickets. Not because they're a bad team, just because it's much more likely. And I think that will change things quite dramatically for them. But it's very hard to see how they don't qualify for the next round, right? And so that's step one.
Yeah.
Right? Tick.
Absolutely.
And once they're in that next round, you know, then let's see how they develop from there. But I'm not completely sold on them. But as far as this group is, as I said, I'm you know, unless the West Indies absolutely smash their faces in, I'm not sure. I don't believe that they're the best team. And, you know, West Indies haven't played anyone yet and have still struggled in one of their games. They're about to play the two teams. They're basically, West Indies have potentially two knockout games coming up against them. Yeah, if they lose to New Zealand, Afghanistan's a knockout game, right? So, yeah. It's really, really tough for them from where they are. New Zealand is the... isn't it New Zealand and Nepal have basically not started this tournament yet? So...
Yeah. They've only played one game each.
There are like several teams who've played three and somehow those teams have only played one each. It's so bizarre.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, coming back to Afghanistan, I think definite Super 8 team. And I also feel like they were born for these particular playing conditions, barring Antigua. Maybe everything suits them. And with that fabled spin bowling attack, I feel like they have a solid chance at the semis at least. Coming to New Zealand, yes, only one game. They dropped catches. Devon Conway looked like a guy who'd never played cricket hadn't played cricket for 3 months because he was injured, of course. He missed a stumping. He missed a run out, which was inexcusable. They looked very rusty and out of sorts. And yeah, that defeat first up with a heavy, you know, net run rate damage over there as well because they were bowled out for 75, right? It does not put them in good stead. The only thing that's going for them is that jersey. The team looks absolutely brilliant. But I feel like New Zealand might be that team that could exit the, you know, T20 World Cup in the first round in that group.
Yeah. They should beat Uganda and Papua New Guinea, right? So really, it's going to come down to maybe what they need is Afghanistan to beat West Indies. And then it's a straight shot between them and the West Indies.
True. Is that otherwise it's a net run rate battle, right?
Yeah, I think I've got that right. So they play them. Oh God, where is it? Is it Trinidad?
Ah, that's a good question.
It's the Brian Lara Stadium. So they play them at the Brian Lara Stadium. They've basically got all their games, all their important games are on ragging turning pitches. So they're not going to have to go up against Rashid Khan next time, but they're going to have to go up against Akhil Hasan and Gutkesh Modi, right? Roston Chase will bowl some overs as well. Mm-hmm. If this is their issue, and it certainly looks like it's their issue at the moment, that's not a good matchup for them, right? They'd rather play in St. Lucia or Antigua or one of the other venues if that was the case. So they've got a lot to do, but they've only played one game. So...
Yep.
You know, at least they've had to practice now. And also, I think the other problem for them is that the next game is the West Indies, right? So their first two games are the two most important games and they've already lost one of them. Like, they're already so far behind where they need to be. You know, it's a little bit awkward, but okay, let's, you know, that's what the schedule does, right? You know, the West Indies almost lost their first game against PNG, right? So, you know,
yeah.
Pakistan have had their issues with first games against associates as well. So, you know, maybe that's not ideal, but it just feels like New Zealand's sitting back watching everyone else win because both Afghanistan and West Indies haven't lost a game yet.
Hmm. I mean, the West Indies, sure, they defeated Papua New Guinea in that tense sort of tournament opener. But then versus Uganda, they were a lot more comfortable, scored 173 and bowled Uganda out for 39. You mentioned Akil Hussain, he took 5 for 11 in that game. And him and Mothi, plus those few overs of Roston Chase, they could test New Zealand. But the West Indies themselves haven't particularly been tested either. So it's a really juicy encounter, that one. And it will probably decide the fate of one of those teams, because I feel like Afghanistan have one foot in the Super 8s.
Yeah, if that wicket spins, and it generally does, it's a spin shootout, right? And at the moment, I think West Indies have the better bowling of spin and maybe play spin slightly better, or have the ability to play spin slightly better. But there are players in that New Zealand side, like Conway and Mitchell, who can play spin really well also. So they can step up, and you know, Bracewell didn't bowl particularly well against Afghanistan. He's a much better bowler than that generally. Santner is fine, but needs to find some wickets for them. You know, so they're not gone. It's just it's sticky.
Yeah, very sticky, and that is one group that everyone will have a keen eye on. Just to wrap up, Group C, Uganda got bowled out for 58 versus Afghanistan. Then got rolled over for 39 versus the West Indies. But they defeated Papua New Guinea by chasing down 78. Lost 7 wickets. Doesn't matter. They recorded their maiden.
Weren't they like 27 for 5 in that one as well?
Something like that.
I mean, they're on the way to being bowled out for 50 there as well. Yeah. It was absolutely ridiculous.
It's a funny story. The guy who scored the runs, Riazat something. Riazat was born in Gilgit-Baltistan, which is disputed territory between India and Pakistan. So people kept having Wikipedia page wars where someone crossed out India, then wrote Pakistan, then someone crossed out Pakistan and wrote India. I mean, the guy plays for Uganda, right? Let that be the only reality. But one guy that I really want to talk about is Frank Nusubuga. I hope I've gotten the pronunciation right.
I call him Frank. 43 years old. He feels like a Frank. To be fair, Chad Soper from Papua New Guinea also feels like a Chad. Sometimes if your first name's that strong, you don't need a second name.
Yeah, maybe he could also pass as a Franco. But anyway, Frank Nusubuga, 43 years of age, is the second oldest cricketer to feature in the T20 World Cup in history. And he recorded the most economical spell in the history of the competition. 2 wickets for 4 runs. What a story. And I mean, them getting to this T20 World Cup was a story on its own. Now they have a victory. That's fantastic for Uganda as a cricketing nation.
Yeah, I think they're the weakest side. So for them to get a victory is huge. It's real shame for Papua New Guinea, who obviously almost stole the first game and then didn't do very well. And Papua New Guinea remind me a little bit of Scotland, where like we all know that they kind of are better than they are if you've watched enough associate cricket. But when they get to the main stage, it hasn't really worked for them. Whereas, you know, sometimes we overrate the teams who do well at the main stage, who don't do all that well outside of the main stage. So, look, it's great for them and great for African cricket in general. You know, we know that other, you know, Kenya and Rwanda and, you know, you've now got Namibia and Zimbabwe and South Africa. Like, that's now an African cricket culture, right? That's not just one or two places. That's a proper African cricket culture. And, we just hope it continues to grow from there. You know, women's cricket as well is another thing that is obviously doing quite well in some parts of Africa. And, you know, Uganda is the glorious crane flying through the sky at the moment for them. And look, there's a cricket has to grow, and it has to grow everywhere. And having a country like Uganda come and be joyous to watch, even when they're terrible, and then steal a game like they did against Papua New Guinea, like, you know, how can you not love cricket? Like, at that point, like, if you don't enjoy Uganda winning a World Cup game from where they were, maybe cricket's not for you.
Yeah, everyone loves a feel-good story. They definitely have one. It's a shame they couldn't get the jerseys they wanted, but at least they got a victory, right? And nice little reference with the crane over there. Coming to Group D. And now that leads us to the third major team that is on the brink of a first-round exit. Sri Lanka, after losing to South Africa in their tournament opener, they also lost the all-important Nagin Derby versus Bangladesh in what ended up as a low-scoring thriller. Mahmudullah held his nerve in the end, ice in that man's veins, and probably some ice in his beard as well. When did Mahmudullah age so much? That's a conversation for another.
It does feel like he's been playing these innings for Bangladesh for a very long time, if we're being honest.
Yeah. But it's crazy how, you know, the Lankan Lions are now looking for a favor from the Netherlands. But they aren't doing great on net run rate either. So even if they do get that favor, it doesn't look, you know, rosy for them at
all. Well, their net run rate isn't that bad because it's only minus 0.777. So if you compare that to England, for instance,
they're not
in that situation. I think the problem for Sri Lanka is that they have stumbled into exactly the World Cup that they needed. It's low scoring.
Also,
it's bowler friendly. Yeah. And it's going to spin like crazy. And they currently have zero wins from two games, right? Like they've, and both of those games, they could have won, right?
Yes.
The South Africa one, they put a lot of, no one should have been defending that. And they would have had to be perfect with the ball to do it, right? But they certainly put pressure on South Africa. And they should have beat Bangladesh, right? Mm-hmm. Forget the batting collapse at the end, because I know that was a part of it. But they should have just beaten them with the ball. And as you know, and they very nearly did. So they have been there and thereabouts, and they've also played the two best teams in their group. Although Netherlands might slightly disagree with that at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, they must be really happy that South Africa beat Bangladesh because now they can kind of hope for the Netherlands to defeat Bangladesh, and then it can go down to net run rate. All they'll need is a handsome victory in both of those, or handsome victories in both of their games. It's funny though. It's a bowling attack that all of us at Good Areas, the entire team, rated quite highly, right? And the batters just haven't given them enough runs to defend.
It might still
even
be.
Even versus Bangladesh.
It might still be the best.
You know, Tushara took 4 for 18.
Yeah.
If they had 135, they were winning that game.
It might still be the best bowling attack in the competition, right? And if they lose to Netherlands, they might win one game. And the way Netherlands are playing really good cricket at the moment, there's no reason the Netherlands can't beat them. So it's absolutely fascinating. If, as you said, if they gave themselves 15 more runs against South Africa and you know, 8 more runs against Bangladesh, they might be 2-0 at the moment. And we might be going, what a team this is. Their batters need to step up a little bit, but their bowlers can defend anything. Look, they can't bat, right? Mm-hmm. They can't
That's
bat.
Understood.
And so I've been saying this for a very long time. And for a very long time, there was a lot of pushback. I think now I'm fiercely in the majority that Sri Lanka can't bat. Yeah. And occasionally on flat pitches, they can hit. And occasionally they can stick in. But when it comes to modern white ball batting, they're just not very good at it, right? It's not their strength. And, you know, and they're in this position because of that.
Yeah, I mean, there were some really crucial moments in that Bangladesh game that helped the Tigers win it. Of course, Tohid Ridhoi's 3 consecutive sixes versus Hasaranga.
Yeah.
Very, very important.
That was huge.
Rashad Hussain took 3 for 22 on T20 World Cup debut. And then that spell of 3 for 18 by the Fizz, in which he got rid of Nisanka, who was in red hot form. I feel like those three guys were ultimately the heroes for Bangladesh. And Sri Lanka, like, sure, Tushara took 4 for 18. But, you know, with the bat, and we were watching this together, if you remember, in the wee hours of the morning.
I have no idea who I watched these games with when they're overnight, but okay.
Yeah. But if you remember, like, there were so many times during those death overs where we were wondering, why are they not throwing the kitchen sink at it? What are you doing, Angelo, with your sexy whips for one?
Yeah.
And that cost them.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose, to be fair to him, although we're probably right that he was playing silly, but he also didn't hog the strike at times when he should have hogged the strike. You know, just simple things that he could have done. But realistically, they had a blitzing start and just needed to bat sensibly from then on in. They didn't. And Hasaranga's faced, what, 3 balls in this tournament? And he's tried to hit, I think he's tried to hit almost every one of them for 6 and it's been out twice. So they're coming in with a lot of intent, which I like, and I can't praise the other teams for having intent and then slag off Sri Lanka, but they're just not matching it with batting talent that has the ability to regularly hit the ball.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. And I mean, it's all not over for them or any of the other teams either right now. So it's an interesting time to record this show. But moving over to Bangladesh, they could have been 2 for 2, Jared. They nearly chased down 114 versus South Africa in New York. And their supporters will definitely tell you that the umpire is to blame over here, right? He gave Tohid Ridhoi out on a delivery, which was not out. Like, you put 10 elite panel umpires over there and maybe one of them gives it out, and that was the one who did give it out. Maybe Chris Gaffney, I cannot remember, but that was, you know, clearly missing leg. And the four leg buys that they would have gotten, they didn't get them because of, you know, the rule.
Dead ball.
How it was a decision. Yeah, dead ball decision overturned. They ultimately lost by 5 runs in the end. So it was a major, you know, turning point in that game. But ultimately, I feel Mahmudullah should have struck that penultimate delivery, that full toss by Maharaj for 6, right? So there you have it. Bangladesh should have won it there and then. They didn't. Maharaj bowled 2 complete pies, proper full tosses, which both deserve to be smashed out of the park. They failed to do that. And fine margins, right?
This is brought to you by Cricket 8. Cricket intelligence for you every day.
That had an over against Maharaj earlier where they hit 1-6 from him and they got 7 off the over. So there was 2 overs where they really should have punished Maharaj and they didn't. And he wasn't bowling particularly well he hasn't bowled well on that surface there 2 or 3 times they've now played on it. So let's just split this up. I'm doing a video on the main channel about the DRS thing and the loophole within the game. But at the end of the day, Bangladesh had a decision go against them in a cricket game, and that happens all the time. That's what it was.
Yeah.
Not saying that we shouldn't fix this, because I do think, realistically, DRS doesn't match perfectly with the laws of cricket, so we just need to make a slight tweak to the way that we look at LBWs in DRS games. I've got no issue with that at all, and it's gone against Bangladesh this time. I'm sure other times it's gone in favour of many other teams before, and this is a close game. But Bangladesh just weren't quite good enough with the bat on what was a tricky wicket.
Yeah.
And let's be honest, South Africa defended 114 without particularly bowling well.
True.
Maharaj didn't bowl
very,
well.
Very true.
Bartman didn't bowl very well. Rabada didn't bowl very well. Nokia was outstanding and unplayable. He looked like Jasprit Bumrah on this wicket. If I was him, I would move to New York. Right. I would move to New York, and this would be my new pitch. And Marco Jansen was really, really good, especially in the first 3 overs. So 3 of their bowlers didn't really step up, and they still almost defended 114. So Bangladesh had plenty of chances. I mean, Rabada was just bowling wide full tosses. Wide half volleys. I'm like, have you watched any of this game? Or any of this? This is your 3rd time on this pitch. Just bang the ball into the pitch. Bang the ball into the pitch. Bang the ball into the pitch. How tricky is this? Right? Harris Ralph just suddenly just went, I'm just going to hit the pitch a lot of times. Oh, look what happens. No one can hit me suddenly, right? Like, silly things like that. And so Bangladesh, we you know, on the DRS thing, we've said it's an umpiring decision that goes against you. Those things happen all the time in cricket.
Yeah.
You have to take that. They went up against South Africa on a day when South Africa didn't play bat very well. Bangladesh bowled really, really well for the majority of that time. Bangladesh made an error with their selections by picking an extra spinner that they definitely did not need, right? So, and they still got the total within a chaseable amount, and they just didn't get there, And part of that was just that Anrik Nokia's overs were so devastating, and Marco Jansen's first spell was so devastating that they were always in a tricky position when it came to run rate. And if you go back to it, it's very similar to what we saw with Pakistan as well, where there are times where you're like, oh, Bangladesh is well on top. And then you decide, but they still need more than a run a ball. And no one has managed on this pitch to ever score comfortably at more than a run a ball. So good luck.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also like how South Africa's bowling attack is shaping up. Sure, they've played only in New York, but now Nokia's got some confidence. Bartman took 4 for 11 versus the Netherlands. And Rabada's had some really poor games. All of those guys, if they come and play well in tandem, that'll serve them well. But then again, Shamsi will come in, right?
Yeah, so they'll change their lineup a little bit, won't they? When they go.
That will definitely.
I mean, I don't know how much we know about South Africa other than the fact that David Miller's in just absolutely sublime form. Mm-hmm. And I actually think Henrik Claassen's in pretty good form too. But are they in
Speaking
form
of which,
on a terrible wicket, or are they just in form? Yeah.
Speaking of which, Litton Das dropped David Miller's catch today. So that was another turning point, right? Like, had he held on, Bangladesh could have potentially won.
Well, to go back, that's the thing about the whole, oh, if this happens, if that happens. Like, the Mahmudullah drop by Marco Jansen at slip. South Africa would have won that game by 40 runs, right, at that point, if he'd taken that. And so that was a huge moment in the game. So, you know, these things happen. And sometimes umpires get things wrong, and sometimes fielders make mistakes. You know, not to mention, I reckon Bangladesh scored about a third of their runs in overthrows today.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, if you look at all things in today's game, it kind of evens out, right? But anyway, speaking of David Miller, he was actually the hero for South Africa versus the Netherlands. His unbeaten 59 rescued his team from a torrid start. They were 4 down for 12 in the power play, and they nearly couldn't chase 104, but then Miller ensured that they did. It could have very well ended in a repeat upset that we saw in the 2022 T20 World Cup. But 2 wins in 2 games, and that upset avoided, and also a crucial win, or 3 games in 3, sorry, a crucial win versus Bangladesh as well. Pretty good start, but all in New York.
Yeah, so who the hell knows? But yes, you're right. Yeah. I think Miller's just been incredible, as I just said. There's the lofted cover drive. I think he might have played a one again today, or the lofted off drive it might have been today, where you just look at him, you just go, like, Rishabh Pant has made runs and quicker, but looked like going out every third ball. Miller doesn't really look like going out on this wicket. It's brilliant the way he's gone about it so far. But how good are South Africa? I have no idea, because they just walked over against Netherlands. They just snatched the game against Bangladesh, and they weren't exactly brutal in the chase against Sri Lanka. But at the same time, India's the only side that's won a game comfortably on this pitch so far. Am I right in saying that?
Versus Ireland.
Yeah, so there's been one comfortable victory on this ground. So if I'm Sri Lanka, if I'm South Africa, I'm taking the 3 and I'm pissing off to the West Indies and never coming back again.
Yeah. Oh, well, if you're Henrik Nokia, you're moving there, right? So
if I'm Henrik Nokia, I am never leaving.
Yeah. Anyway, the Dutch are also still in contention in Group D. They beat Nepal in their tournament opener. And slow left-armer Tim Pringle, son of Chris Pringle from New Zealand, he was the player of the match, took a 3-for. Logan van Beek also took a 3-for and is bowling extremely well these days. That delivery, who was it against versus South Africa? Who did he clean up? Reza Hendricks. What a ball, right? So both of those guys took 3-fers versus Nepal. Max O'Dowd hit an unbeaten anchoring half century. You said he's the best associate batter to be in that particular situation to kind of chase down a sub-100 total. And I mean, Nepal also dropped 2 catches, including one of Max O'Dowd. So it's not like the game was entirely one-sided. They could have lost that one, Netherlands, but they got the important 2 points. And hey, they could very well defeat Bangladesh on their day. It's not something, even Sri Lanka, they are that team. I think they are.
Where do they play Sri Lanka? Do you know where that one is?
I'm not sure.
I think that will probably play a big part in that particular game. So that one is at St. Lucia. Yeah, that helps Netherlands a little bit. Not that I want to face Pathorana at St. Lucia, but Netherlands look like they have a more solid batting lineup at the moment. At the very least, they look like they can, you know, it looks like a more consistent batting lineup. Maybe it doesn't have quite the highs of that Sri Lanka could possibly get to, although we're going to have to see that. But that's a completely different tournament, right? Like, to go from New York to St. Lucia, like, I can't think of two more different kinds of environments that you're going to be in, you know, and that's why World Cups are so great. Look, Netherlands did a great thing against South Africa. And at the very least, they have got a very good net run rate. I mean, it's par, but I mean, like, very good. I mean, they're playing Bangladesh and Sri Lanka. If they can win one of those games, you know, especially if they win the one against Bangladesh, they're a huge chance, aren't they, at that stage of getting through? And then it's, you know, it might be about net run rate. You know, there's a few different things, because South Africa's so far ahead, that group is kind of wide open for the second spot. But if I'm Netherlands, I'm pretty happy at having to play Sri Lanka St. Lucia. And the other one is in, oh my God, why have I forgotten where the other game is? The other one's in the West Indies as well, and I now cannot remember. So the other one's Bangladesh. Is it the Kingston Ground?
Is it? I haven't really looked at all of the
venues. No, I'm just trying to remember everything off the top of my head. I think it is. I think it's in St. Vincent at Kingston. So, again, they've got a hugely different tournament against two different teams. I think the St. Lucia one helps them in that it doesn't generally spin a lot in St. Lucia. St. Vincent, I'd have to go back through my numbers and have a look, but I think the spinners will play a part there. But I think if I'm Netherlands, I think my batting's Bangladesh level, maybe, you know, if not slightly better. And Tim Pringle's bowling absolutely beautifully. You know, Van Meekeren's bowled really good, as you said. Logan Van Beek's bowled some great balls. Vimy Kimma. It fits really well together, kind of until they get to the death and they have to use Baz Dalida. Up until that point, it fits really well together. But Baz Dalida is a natural wicket taker. They could take wickets. They have a couple of anchors in their batting. They maybe don't have as many guys that can just come in and whack it and change your game quickly. But you can maybe, outside of Ridoi, I'm not sure that Bangladesh has that either. So it could be a really fascinating game. And that might be the game for the next round.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the one game to look forward to most in this group now. And it might well go down to net run rate. Also love how Netherlands are the only team who use one of their opening bowlers to bowl four overs on the bounce. Vivian Kingma has been doing that for a couple of games. Final talking point for overthrows. How about that Nepalese crowd in Dallas?
It was great, wasn't it? You know, they are a sleeping giant. I think most people who know associate cricket know just how much passion there is in cricket over there. They've had their problems with administration. Obviously, they had a problem with their star player in multiple ways, really. You know, Paris Kadkar left early as well because of some of the issues within Nepalese cricket. So, you know, they've had their issues, but I don't know what their ceiling is in cricket. But I don't know if there's been a country that has embraced cricket on the level that Nepal has since Bangladesh came in, right? And that's no disrespect to Ireland and Afghanistan and a lot of the other associates, but there is a passion and a level of love for cricket in Nepal that is just absolutely infectious. And, you know, their crowd lived every moment of that game and almost got them over the line in Dallas, right?
Yeah. Like, what a thing. Had they caught that catch, Max O'Dowd's catch, it was game on. Yeah. And I mean, if you've ever seen the crowds in Kathmandu, right, they are insane. So I wasn't surprised to see that crowd in Dallas either.
I was surprised just because I didn't know there were that many Nepalese people in America.
Of course there were. I mean, they're brown people everywhere.
Yeah, right? But you say that, but it's not like the Nepalese restaurants and stuff you see a lot in other parts of the Western world, but I've never really heard of, you know, Nepalese culture in America in that way, right? Like, and it's Dallas. So again, I didn't know. It's a bit like when Zimbabwe had that incredible support in Australia. And I was like, even I didn't know that many Zimbabweans lived in Australia.
Yeah, fair enough. Anyway, that wraps up overthrows and our T20 World Cup roundup. We do have to take some super chats though, so head right over there, Jared.
Wow.
I think there are seven, which actually is not that bad a number. ABCDF comes up first. He says, comparisons between Virat and Babar once seemed very reasonable after Babar's innings versus New Zealand in 2019 World Cup. He looks set to become the top batter of his generation. Why hasn't he reached those levels? I was there in 2019 at Edgbaston for that knock. I feel like if you go a year and a half, you know, behind, we're still having that conversation. But, you know, this has been a really, really shit period for Babar Azam and Pakistan cricket. I mean, they've won 9 games of cricket since that reserve day from hell in that Asia Cup in 2023. I don't know what the technical reasons might be. But yeah, I mean, sure, he might be matching Kohli on numbers till a certain point, but he's going to have to do a whole lot more to ever reach that level.
He's not going to reach that level now, is he? Because how old is
probably
he?
Probably not.
At the moment?
He's 30.
Yeah, he's already into his peak and he's already had a dip. That doesn't mean that he won't reach, you know, he won't go nuts again in the next 2 or 3 years. And if he's a Pakistani player, he might be at his best when he's 44. But he's probably not going to reach that Virat Kohli level. If you go back through his career, though, he has had a lot of highs and lows. He had one of the worst starts to Test cricket that any...
Yes.
You know, I don't know if there's ever been a player of his talent at his age that came into Test cricket that was as poor as he was. So, you know, it's always been a bit up and down with him. Technically, I don't see any massive problems. I do think the mental part of cricket, you know, he's not a big part of my book, but, you know, the more I talk to players, the more you realize that a lot of these things are, it's just that the way you handle pressure, the way you problem solve in games and the way you evolve as cricket moves are the three most important things. And I wonder if Babar just hasn't been able to do that at times. And when he gets it right, there's not much you can do to him, right? And when he doesn't get it right, it just nothing seems to work.
And I mean, Virat Kohli is a mentality monster. We know that. Babar, not so much. So there you have your difference. Anmol Srivats asks, why did both teams not just bowl length only? By my count, they were like 3 to 4 bounces after the power play off length balls across both innings. Yet they both kept offering full balls, which sometimes got whacked.
That because it could be any... I know he's talking about the New York pitch.
Yes, that I also understand.
But I don't know exactly. There was Marco Janssen, and he's probably talking about India-Pakistan. I don't know, but it could be either of the games. But Marco Janssen came on for his last over, and he bowled a bunch of back of a length stuff and could not be hit. And then suddenly, he just bowls a half volley. And I'm thinking to myself, what do you think's going to happen here? Right? He's obviously going for the Yorker, but no one's trying to whack the Yorker out the ground anyway. So best chance is they jam the Yorker out and they get a single on the leg side, right? Just keep bowling back of a length. Just keep bowling what works. And we talked about it with Rabada as well. Arshdeep is another one. We're like, I get it. You're a swing bowler. It's not your natural length. Just go with me on this one though. Just go with me that it works here. Because if it can work for Jeremy Gordon of Canada, I just think it can work for Arshdeep Singh of India, right? So you're right. Width is another one, Anmol. Like most of the runs have been from wide balls or from full balls, right? And occasionally slipping down the leg. I don't have. If you're trying to bowl sort of at middle and off back of a length, sometimes the batter's going to get their body inside it. But your general point is true, and you know if you'd been in any one of the many different chats I've been in, you'll know how angry I have been at some of the balls that I have seen. I was apoplectic about Rabada's bowling today. I was so angry with the way he was bowling. And he got a wicket with one of those balls as well. It was terrible. He is way too good to be bowling like that.
Cricket 8 brings you this show. They are analysing every part of our game. Head over for their watch-alongs, podcasts, and articles on what is really happening on the field and why it matters. Cricket8.com is your place for cricket intelligence.
Yeah, I mean, on the New York surface, you've got to be targeting the stumps and either good length or back of a length. Bounces, no good. Width, no good. Fuller length deliveries also. If you can get to the pitch of the ball, you can nullify the surface as much as you can, right? Anyway, Indie Guy with the next super chat says, many fans seem to agree the best T20 batter is Klaassen or Sky. I can see the numbers and understand why. Ooh, you rhymed! But NBA fans, despite impressive numbers, accepted Jokic as the best in the world only after multiple playoff performance and a ring to go with it. And I think there's more to this. And I also think he's taking a dig at you.
No, he's not. He's saying that Jokic's a legend.
With the Jokic
thing. That's all he needs to be saying. I don't even think we need the and. Wait, here it is.
And also holds the lack of a ring against Luka. Both these batters' career highlights as of now remains performance in not-so-crucial league stage matches in IPL and T20 World Cup. Are cricket fans too lenient? I think it's fair to say that Sky and Klaassen haven't scored in big games.
Wasn't Sky fantastic in the last T20 World Cup? Hasn't Sky won titles with Mumbai?
Well, so I guess it's a different ball game with the... Or in an Indian jersey versus in the IPL.
But I just said wasn't he fantastic in that last World Cup at times? He played two brilliant innings that I can think of in that time. So, and he's won IPL titles. So the whole thing of comparing him to Joker or Luka doesn't make any sense. Well, Luka might not win a championship, but those sorts of players doesn't make any sense anyway, because that's not how international cricket works. Mm. Right? So Andy Flower, no... You can't tell me that Andy Flower wasn't a great batter because Zimbabwe didn't win more games when Andy Flower was there, right? You can't tell me that Fazal Mahmood wasn't a great bowler because Pakistan didn't win more test matches or Hadley didn't win more test matches for their team, right? So straight away, when you're saying we're being too lenient, maybe what you're really saying is that NBA fans are too ring obsessed, right?
Yeah, perhaps.
It's a team sport. You can only do so much, right? Garfield Sobers was maybe... Well, certainly in the top three greatest players of all time, right? West Indies weren't a dominant side when Garfield Sobers was there, right? It's a team sport and there are 10 other people. Basketball's slightly different because there is only 4 other people on the court with you at any one time. And it's a lot more, you know, the amount of possessions, Luka on offense touches the ball about 180 times a game, right? And Dallas only seemed to touch 120 times a game. So I don't even know how that works mathematically. So it is a little bit different with basketball. Henrik Larsson has been the best batter in the world over the last little while. I don't think that necessarily means that his teams are always guaranteed to win, though. we're talking about two different things. And I think once you start doing stuff like that, you just go down the hole of American fans. And Joker was a great player before the Nuggets won a title. To think that him winning the title had to guarantee that doesn't mean anything, because I've watched Karl Malone play for absolutely generations. And I'm sure there are great footballers who never won a lot of titles that are still great footballers. And that's not what, sometimes you're just in the wrong place. One of the best basketballers I've ever seen is Kevin Garnett. And he was at a fucking horrendous franchise, and they didn't win because of the franchise. And the minute he went to a half decent franchise, they won, right? Sometimes it's just that simple. So I think we have to be a bit smarter with the way that we look at players. And we're looking at their individual batting anyway. But in Sky's case, I actually think he does have titles. So I'm not really sure how that holds true for him anyway.
Also, like, if you go to basketball, anyone who played in the Jordan era and didn't win, like, it's not their fault, right?
That's Karl Malone.
8 years in which there's Jordan and Hakeem Olajuwon, and that's it. And, like, the Patrick Ewings and the Charles Barkleys, they didn't win.
And so if Jordan plays all that time and Hakeem Olajuwon never wins a championship, are we then saying Hakeem Olajuwon's not great? Like, I mean, that's what I mean. Team is a situation. And, you know, you look at a couple of years ago, this is a basketball analogy, but a couple of years ago, Philadelphia 76ers had Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, and they were both on a trajectory based on their stats of all-NBA glory. And then it fell down spectacularly. They kept making horrible decisions with the personnel around them. Joel Embiid kept getting injured. All these things kept happening. Boston had two stars that were maybe not quite at the level combined of those two other players, but Boston kept putting better players around them. And now Boston are 2-0 against Dallas. Like, does that make Jason Tatum a better player than Joel Embiid? No, right? Yeah. That's not how sport is played. And we have to be honest about that. And international cricket, even less so, right? Heinrich Klaassen has only just got good over the last couple of years. And within that time, they haven't played a World Cup. They'd already lost the previous World Cup before he sort of got to his peak.
Also, one of those Philadelphia fuck-ups was thanks to Kawhi Leonard of the Toronto Raptors.
Yeah, the lucky bounce, right? Like, do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, so stuff like that. Bad also, management and all sorts of things. Like, all of these things play a part. And it's like, Joel Embiid can only do so much with his dodgy knees and his massive frame, right? Like, we've got to be realistic with these things sometimes.
Yeah. Think of it like this, indie guy. You think of the two best T20 batters in contemporary cricket, and you'd probably come up with Sky and Klaassen, right?
And who would you have had before?
Two names you'd probably think of.
Gale and de Villiers?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. Are we actually saying that they weren't great T20 players because their teams didn't win? Are we blaming...
I mean, de Villiers is a prime example.
Are we blaming de Villiers for Corey Anderson being a death bowler here? Like, what? I mean, at a certain point, you have to put a good side around these people.
Yeah. Fair enough. All right, next Super Chat. Anmol Srivats asks, how do you think the pitches in the West Indies, we've not seen yet, including North Sound, are likely to play? Also, how come it seems easier to bat in Barbados during the day rather than at night, though it's dewy?
Yeah, I don't know about the Barbados one. I haven't noticed that as much, Anmol. You might be right, but I just haven't noticed that as much. North Sound is a batting pitch. I saw the odds when Oman made 155 the other day, and like they were still a good chance looking at the odds of winning that. And I was like, if that's the Antigua wicket I know against Scotland, unless Bilal Khan takes like 7 wickets, I don't think they're going to be winning that one. St. Lucia, generally a batting wicket. St. Vincent, I should know, and I've probably got notes on somewhere, but I can't think of off the top of my head. And Trinidad obviously spins more or less. It's helpful for spin in both places. That's where we're going, and Guyana is Guyana.
Yes. All right. Next Super Chat. Aditya Bilal says, Behram, how did you get Jared to learn Kudrat Ka Nizam? I don't think it was me. I think he learned it on his own.
You know what? It was Kritika Naidu who actually taught me how to pronounce it, which I should have just asked Behram. But it's one of those things that, like, I know it's been going on for a while. And, you know, I've probably written about it a few times, but yeah, once Suck Lane said it, I think I got tagged. Yeah. I had a tweet thread that went viral during the last World Cup when I talked about that ridiculous bouncer that almost won, got Pakistan into the World Cup final.
The Harris Ralph bouncer to Bastille.
Yeah. So I remember that must have been in my tweets in that World Cup about 5,000 times. Like, I don't know how many times that Twitter thread went, and every time anything crazy happened to Pakistan in that World Cup, people would say, Jared, it's Kudrat Ka Nizam. Did I get that right?
Yeah. Yes. Pronounce it with a K. It's easy.
Yeah. Kudrat. Yeah. I write it. I've got it written down on my board now with a K.
Yes, that's smart. Because the Q confuses people. People call me Behram Quasi. So there's that. Aditya Bilal, once again, is it wise to slog first, anchor later in New York? Well, I mean, power play, fielders in the inner circle, ball is hard. Yes.
It's a weird one, isn't it? Because we've had a bunch of teams also collapse early.
True.
So South Africa collapsed twice early there. Sri Lanka collapsed early-ish there. Even India lost a couple of early wickets. So yes,
yeah,
and no is my answer. And
don't play the ball square. That's what I'll say.
It's hard to play it straight when they're bowling back of a length to you, though, isn't it, as well? I think the best shot is sort of getting inside the line and just turning it to square leg over and over again. But you only can make 80 runs doing that. So, look, Aditya, one thing I would say is that wicket plays very differently on slightly different days. And some days it seems to nip around a little bit. On those days, I just don't think you can slog first. On the days where it's coming on, I mean, never coming on well on that wicket, but on the days when it's not swinging or seaming sideways, you're probably better off to attack early on and put yourself in a good position and even be prepared to lose a couple of wickets. Because one thing I think you can do is once you get two batters set, you know, be it David Miller, Mahmudullah, you know, there's been a few players that I've seen do this. Rizwan was another one, of course. That ability to just turn the ball for singles is actually the one thing that you can do if you're set. Unfortunately, if you're not set, you end up like Shivam Dubey or Ravi Jadeja, where you can't even freaking defend sometimes. So it's such a weird wicket.
It is really, really weird. And we're going to make a footmarks on it, so you guys stay tuned for that. Adastida, I hope I got your pronunciation right, says, just to thank you for all the amazing content you put out as a group. Question, Scotland's form looks quite good. Is there a good chance they run deep? Well, thank you. And yes, we actually spoke about it. Any final comments on that, Jared?
Yeah, I mean, run deep is the interesting part of this, because I think he's assuming they're going to make it to the second round. I still think that's about a 55% chance. I don't think they run deep further into the tournament, but I think they can upset a couple of teams in the next stage if they do get through. But I don't think they run deep. I don't think they're a legitimate semi-final chance if they do get through to the next round.
Yeah, of course. Like, the semi-finals would be a stretch. Tinesh Selvaratnam says, great content. Keep it up. Thank you, Tinesh. And that's not the first time you've said that either. We really appreciate it. And the generous donation as well. Just one question. Where do you both rate Shamin Davas in the all-time fast bowlers list? If we're talking about ODI, new ball, left arm, seamers, high.
Yeah, I think he's probably underrated, partly because his record doesn't look as good and he wasn't particularly fast, right? Like, he wasn't, you know, his best ball was very, very sexy, but he averages in ODI cricket around, what, 27, 29 in Test cricket. T20 cricket was probably what would have been his best format. And we didn't see him play all that much, and they didn't win all that much when he was around. He certainly wasn't in his peak, right? Like, my God, he must have started his career about 20 years before T20 cricket. So, no, I would rate him very high as an overall talent, as an all-format bowler.
Yeah,
would have loved to have seen what he would have become, you know, in that sort of wobble ball era and T20 era, just because I think he was maybe slightly ahead of his time. But to be a bowler who can bowl at about 130 kilometers an hour and have that good of a record for so long, especially in Asia, I think just tells you the control and the intelligence that he had. So, yeah, I certainly rate him quite high.
Yeah, yeah. He could make that new ball talk. No mug with the bat either. I love myself some Shamin Davas. Anyway, Sankalp Verma says, barring the danger to players and promoting the game in US, New York pitch has now played better in the last two matches. Isn't this kind of pitch a good change from belters every now and then? Shouldn't this be encouraged? Well, I mean, I'm fine with bowling friendly surfaces. I'm not fine with the unsafe bounce on this track. That's pretty much it.
Did it play better in these last two matches, or were there more boundaries because they cut the grass shorter? I don't think it played
probably
any better in these last couple of games. I mean, one team couldn't chase 115 and another team couldn't chase 119. You know, against Netherlands, South Africa could have been bowled out for like 50. You know, but let's be honest here. I don't think it has been all that much better. It's about the safety, right? If you're trying to give me a reason why this is a good pitch, it's not. If you want to say that the cricket's been entertaining because of the fact it's been bowler friendly and all these games have been so close, I'm all for that, right? I've got no issue with that. But it's not a good surface. It shouldn't be encouraged. Yeah. We shouldn't ever see a surface this bad again at another World Cup. Mm. And the ICC should be ashamed that the top players in the world are having to play on this surface. The fact that it's been entertaining is fine. This isn't a bowlers versus batters thing, because everyone knows I'm pro bowling wickets, right? This is how many people got hit in the frigging gloves in the India-Pakistan game because the pitch wasn't any good.
Yeah.
If you can't defend the ball, right, without getting caught at short cover, what are we talking about? That's not even a normal wicket at this point.
Yeah. Also, save your breath, Jared, because we're doing a footmarks on this. And the pitch that you want, Sankalp, is probably Guyana, right? That's the low-scoring pitch that you can dream of or something.
Yeah, exactly. Guyana's been... it's funny how many people have defended the New York pitch and no one said to me, oh, that Guyana pitch is really good. Well, Guyana's... It does exactly the same thing, except for the fact that it's not unsafe.
Yeah, absolutely. Sankalp Verma again says, Lamichane will play this World Cup. Forget the big three. The ICC can't even enforce ethical standards in its own event in the West Indies regarding a player of an associate nation. Is this a missed opportunity for the ICC? Is he playing? Because last I checked, he wasn't.
I didn't think he was playing either. This is complete news to me if this has happened.
Yeah.
When you say ethical standards, though, he's being found not guilty. Am I right in saying that, Bayram?
By a high court in Kathmandu. There's the whole Mekhi Arantini.
Yeah, exactly. There, right? It's very similar to Mekhi Arantini. Mm-hmm. Both of them were found guilty and then were found not guilty on appeal or high courts or however these things work.
Yeah.
So what ethical standards would the ICC have? Like, they would have to have done an investigation into this themselves. I'm assuming they thought the Nepalese police system was kind of be better suited to do that. So I can't imagine that I can't imagine how the ICC would be able to say that he couldn't play in this tournament. So I don't know
also
about ethical standards. I don't even see how that plays a part, if we're being honest.
I mean, also Sankalp, I mean, they can't just change their squad midway unless there's some sort of injury, right? Unless they force an injury. And also, I mean, last I checked and I've been following this, I don't think he's going to come.
I'm just going to do a quick news thing in case he's just seen something that we haven't seen. Yeah. Oh no, he's arrived in. He's right. He's arrived.
Oh no
in the
way.
West
all right then.
Previously denied. Let's have a look. Next in action again. Yeah. So I don't know if that means he's going to play. But as I said, his conviction was overturned. Like he's been found not guilty in a court of law. Like I'm not. Yeah. I have no idea if he's guilty or not because I haven't been on the jury and I haven't been part of following any of that side of it. But I don't see how the ICC could say no to a player who's been found not guilty. It's a little bit different if they have like their own evidence or if in domestic violence cases, it can be a little bit tricky. And sometimes leagues will cancel a player's right to play, but that is because they have images of the player doing it. But then the spouse might decline to press charges, but they have proof of it happening. I haven't followed this case well enough to know. But I don't see, I'm more than happy to stick the boot into the ICC. I just don't see how the ICC would be able to not allow him to play in this situation.
Yeah. So Sanjeev Bhaumik in the comments has told us that he is in the squad. He just didn't get a visa for the US.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that. Yeah.
Let's see if he features or not. If he's available, they'll definitely play him. But yeah, you probably need to pick your battles with the courts in Nepal. The ICC couldn't really do anything over there. Abhishek Ravichandran with the final super chat of Overthrows asks one question and one request. Why are associate nations so better at bowling than batting? And then can you guys make a video explaining the numbers behind true values? You know what, Jared? I was actually going to talk to you about this, that we should have a little explainer thing which dumbs it down for lay people.
Yeah, we have done it before, but it was probably early on when we came up with them. So it's a fair while since then. I'm sure we'll do something. We'll probably put an article up on Good Errors as well so people can link to it and everything. Why is Associate Nations so much better at bowling than batting? I'm trying to think if that's right. So Scotland obviously aren't. No, I don't think that's right, Abhishek, overall. It's certainly not my understanding of it. No, I wouldn't have thought so. One thing I would say is that a lot of those associate teams play on wickets that aren't as great and consistently. And if you play on wickets that aren't as great consistently, so the Dutch players always talk about this. A lot of the wickets in the Netherlands are just not great. And then they get to international level and everything comes on perfectly and they almost don't know what to do with that jump up. And I think that probably plays a small part sometimes. But certainly Ireland was a batting team for a long time. Scotland has been a batting team. The old Kenya sides were batting sides. So there's been a lot of very good, you know, there's a lot of batting dependent associate teams as well. And then you've got the sort of more the all round battler sides like Namibia and Papua New Guinea, who don't really have any strengths or weaknesses. But yeah, usually what happens with associate cricket is they have maybe one guy who's international world class, maybe three other players who are like first class level, and then a bunch of club cricketers. And so if you do have like one or two players who are world class in a certain skill, they're probably more, they're going to lean you towards one way or the other. Like we were talking about with David Visa before, right? I don't think they are necessarily a bowling team when you look at the stats. But they probably feel more like a bowling team when David Visa is bowling at the death, right? Whereas actually, they're probably about level overall.
Yeah, fair enough. We actually got another super chat, so let's take that quickly. Aditya Bilal once again says, do you think Hindi/Urdu to cricket will soon become like Spanish to football? India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Nepal, Afghanistan understand it. Think we might already be there, given that a lot of these associate nations have diaspora, you know, players?
Yeah, I talked to someone not that long ago from one of the Indian TV channels. I can't remember which one now, so I won't say, but it was, you know, one of the Sony or Star or whoever. And they said that in India, the Hindi channel, even though Hindi isn't the biggest language, is by far the most listened to cricket coverage. Hmm. And I have been saying for a while that this is already on the books. Probably, it will be a little bit like Spanish and English, if you know what I mean. Hmm. In football, and it will be Hindi Urdu and English in cricket, that combination. Yeah. I think that's probably where we're going. I think that makes the most sense. And also, you know, cricket is an English language sport because it's England, yes, and it's no longer an English dominated sport. So it would make sense for another language to come in. And Hindi isn't the biggest language in India, of course, but because of Urdu, a lot of Pakistan, as you say, a lot of Afghanistanis speak it as well. Suddenly you have like, you know, a lot of people who understand it, even if they don't all speak it, which is, you know, then we come to the Spanish/Portuguese aspect of football, right?
I feel like Bollywood has a big part to play because that's watched in all of these countries, right, that you named, and that kind of takes the language even further. Yeah. So yeah, I feel like if not already there, then soon it will be. Like, if you look at the sheer number of people who play the sport, it's already the major language. But just because, you know, it's a Commonwealth sport or was a Commonwealth sport, which is now expanding thanks to this T20 World Cup as well, now you're going to see, you know, different, you know, countries appear, and maybe you'll see different languages as well.
I also think that aspirationally, a lot of the best commentators and writers traditionally wanted to work in English. In fact, they still do, right?
Yeah.
And I think now there is maybe a little bit more of, wait a minute, I could cash in Hindi now. And I know that sounds really, but that's kind of, I've heard those conversations before, right? And so I do think the thinking behind it is a very different than it used to be.
Also, I feel like as far as international broadcasts are concerned, we're still a while away till, you know, English is not the dominant language. Because then again, that's the one language that everyone understands, or most countries do.
So, yeah. Anyway. I think because English is so strong in so many, because of the Commonwealth, it's always going to play a part in cricket one way or another. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. All right. That wraps up this episode of Overthrows. Thank you, everybody, in the comment section and for the super chats. As I've said this, there is another super chat that's come in right away. So I suppose we'll just take that. Rishabh Sharma says, observe politically left-inclined people like low-scoring games and right-like high scoring games. I want to see your data.
Yeah, I don't know. I've got a friend who's very, very left wing, and he believes that if you score under 300 in a test match, there should be an inquiry. And he's like a left wing green voting vegan. So I've never seen that before. I love the vibes of it. While we're here as well, I should say on this podcast that I have, my new book is out. overthrowing cricket's empire. Ooh. Since we were talking about English and Hindi, I should have brought that up then. It's about the history of all the teams who have beaten England for the first time from back from the 1800s when Australia did it all the way through to Afghanistan in the last World Cup. So I'm really hoping that Oman and that and Namibia don't ruin my book release. If they do, I'll certainly be going on air to promote my book even more vehemently than before. But please, it's up on Amazon at the moment. I'm sure it's out in other retailers as well. If you can find it, Overthrowing Cricket's Empire. Abhishek and I worked on it together. So please go and buy that. But let's finish this podcast before we both die.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you to everyone who came in the comments and sent all of those super chats. Just a quick reminder, if you want access to all of our written work, our videos and our podcasts, you can go to goodareas.co. Bookmark that webpage. That can be your one-stop shop for all of the work that we do over here. And we'll be back next week with another episode of Overthrows. That is all for now. So you guys have a good one. And yeah, goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, you will need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up great clips from your podcast chats and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.